Hello and good day to everyone. This is a special episode of the Persian podcast Radio Chista, which is a podcast bridging the mythology of different nations of the world and abstract ideas which help people in their personal and cognitive development. This special episode was designed for March 8th, the International Women's Day. The team at Radio Chista has decided to add an English version to our monthly podcast, and this special episode seemed to be the best place to start with that. I am Magira, your English-speaking host for today's episode. These days, in the 21st century, after movements like hashtag MeToo in the West, and now hashtag Woman Life Freedom in Iran, where the idea of Radio Chista originates, knowledge and cognition is more vital than ever. And in this episode, we are going to talk about women and knowledge, which is our most precious belonging in life, and the revolt of cognizant humankind on the way towards freedom. Let us begin.
Oedipus, the famous character of Greek mythology, had two sons named Polynices and Eteocles, as well as two daughters named Antigone and Ismene. He was the king of the city-state of Thebes, but after he went blind, he left the city. His daughters Antigone and Ismene followed him to guide and help him. They nursed their father for years until his eventual death. After the death of Oedipus, Antigone and Ismene returned to Thebes. They found themselves inside an internal war between their two brothers, one of whom was ruling as the legitimate heir of Oedipus, and the other was conspiring with their uncle to take control of the city. The two sisters tried to mediate and solve the problem for their own and their city's sake, but it was a futile effort. Their brothers Polynices and Eteocles were consumed by the idea of ruling. The result of the war was the death of both brothers, which led to their uncle Creon becoming the king, an outcome that most probably he intended from the beginning. Creon decided to hold an official funeral for Eteocles, who helped him gain power, but he forbade anyone to bury the body of Polynices since, as a traitor, he deserved to rot in an undignified way. In Thebes' political system, the decision of the king was the final ruling. Nobody could challenge that, let alone a woman. However, Antigone, who was witnessing this cruelty against her brother, decided to hold a funeral for him secretly. She proposed this to her sister Ismene, but Ismene answered, "It is not for us, who are but women, to contend with men. The king's word is mighty, and to this, the harsher words than this we needs must bow." But Antigone believed that my rights to hinder is no right of his, and left the city in the night and buried her brother alone. When Creon, the king of Thebes and her uncle, found out, he ordered the capture and eventual execution of Antigone and summoned her to court as a last chance if she wanted to beg for her life. Yet Antigone proudly stood against the masculine power of Creon and defended her moral action. Antigone knew she would be executed soon, so she ended her own life in a dark cave. After her, Creon's son, who was fond of Antigone, also committed suicide and made a tragedy for both Creon and the whole city of Thebes, which showed how the death of one woman could affect a whole society.
Values are neither good nor evil in and of themselves. It is an imbalance between them and what they clash with that creates devastating tragedies. Sometimes these tragedies have wondrous aftermaths. Sometimes the death of a single woman can change a whole society. But how much should we support these values and traditions? Is human dignity worth sacrificing one's life? is standing against power wise? Regardless of whether it is wise or not, it is something to be praised. Why is it always, even while answering these fundamental questions, that gender becomes a factor? Why is the significance of Antigone's death different from her brother's for Creon? Why is it that Antigone's rebellion against the power of Creon sounds much more epic than her brother's, to the extent that it is Antigone who became the main character and not her brother? The role of women in societies and their values related to them can be one way to answer many of these questions. This is what is happening in Iran today and has attracted the attention of the whole world. Iranian women fearlessly stand against the tyranny of their government, men fight alongside them and for their rights, and political prisoners are showing their support through passive resistance like hunger strikes. This movement has been repeatedly mentioned as the first female revolution in the whole of human history. After the 1979 revolution in Iran, the role of women was one of the first things that was affected. The mandatory hijab law a year after, and then the morality police in the next decade as the enforcement authority for this law, has been a sign of this change in the role of women. In recent years, as the fundamentalists gain more power in the scene of Iranian politics, the brutality of the morality police also increased. One of the precursors of the current movement in Iran was a video that went viral in July 2022, in which a woman named Sepideh Roshno defended her own choice of clothing on a bus against a fundamentalist woman. This video resulted in detainment of Sepideh, and then showing her forced confession on Iranian national television, in which even her signs of torture were not covered. The Iranian society was still shocked by the bitter story of Sepideh when suddenly, in September 2022, less than 2 months after that, the brutality of the morality police resulted in the death of Gina, or Mahsa Amini. Gina was a 22-year-old Kurdish-Iranian woman from a small city of Saqqez who had traveled to Tehran to visit her family. In her funeral, people chanted a famous slogan of Kurdish freedom fighters, "Woman, life, freedom." And this became the beginning of a movement against the Iranian government, which at least lasted 100 days in the streets. And it is still going on under every layer of society. The main demands of this movement are gender equality, separation of religious and political institutions, or as it is called, secularism, welfare of the people, and freedom of choice and beliefs. It can be said with certainty that even if this movement hasn't yet changed much in the Iranian governing system, it has changed a lot in Iranian social, personal, and collective values. Above all are the values of the role of women in the society. For example, right until a few months ago, in many places in Iran, not clothing modestly would be a sign of indecency. Now, not wearing hijab or even showing more of the body is not only no longer criticized, but applauded for the bravery of those women who do it. On social media, gendered language is heavily attacked after the beginning of this movement. It seems that this feminist movement of woman, life, freedom, which is the result of the tragic death of Gina or Mahsa Amini, in a very short time had made a very big change in the society.
Take a look around, and you see, there's a woman right.
But when we say feminism, we are not talking about a 100-day event, but something as long as human history itself. You can even trace it back to the time of the ancient Greeks in poems of people such as Sappho, and it has been going on since. Yet, it is the late 19th century when movements for equality and feminism with its current name and structure is formed and became a social reality, which is heavily rooted in Victorian England. Feminist theory is the expansion of feminism to theoretical and philosophical thoughts, as well as the application of these thoughts in anthropology, sociology, economics, literary theory, art history, psychoanalysis, and many more fields. Feminist theory tries to understand gender inequality and focuses its criticism on gender politics, power relations, and women's rights. It studies discrimination, stereotyping, objectification, and oppression, as well as patriarchy. Elaine Showalter is a famous theoretician in the field who believes feminism has three stages. The first would be feminist criticism, in which the feminist reader reads the works written in a male-dominated discourse and ruminates on the ideologies behind them. The second stage for Showalter is feminine criticism, in which the female writer and critic starts to write about the issues of women. And the last stage is gender theory, in which the very concept of gender is being studied through a critical lens. Feminism has many definitions influenced by the background, ideology, or class status of the people who defined it. One such definition is socialist feminism. This definition came out of the dialectic between radical feminism and Marxist feminism. Juliet Mitchell, Heidi Hartman, and Alison Jagger are among the main theoreticians in this kind of feminism. The main concern of the socialist feminists is explaining how patriarchy and capitalism are inherently related. In other words, they believe for analyzing the inferior status of women and devising strategies for change, we should not have a one-dimensional look to the concept of equality, but we should consider a collection of conditions and reasons from which the inferior status of women stem. Therefore, socialist feminists believe that for changing the status quo and in order to reach an equal society, we should simultaneously fight patriarchy and capitalism. In this way, we have a multi-dimensional changing solution, which should be focused on understanding one main thing that connects all these dimensions, and that is power relations.
This is a man's world. This is a man's world. But it wouldn't mean nothing, nothing without woman or a girl.
In this outlook focused on power relations, one of the very interesting but lesser known theoreticians is Nancy Hartsock. She focuses on two things in her work, specifically her seminal work called Money, Sex, and Power, published in 1983. The two things are, one, how relations of domination are constructed and maintained along lines of gender, and two, whether social understanding of domination is distorted by the domination of women by men. With accepting a Marxian understanding of ideology, Hartsock says which theories and ideas of each time period are rooted in the material and economic relations of the society. This includes power relations. Thus, she criticizes power theories in political sciences as they all are constructed on an economic preconception which only considers the economic relations of the ruling class and not the inferior class, or in its Marxian term, working class. This more or less Marxist outlook helps her to explain how power relations and domination are almost always related to masculinity. Therefore, Hartsock's theory is not a Marxist theory in its classic sense, but it uses some Marxist outlooks as tools to expand on her personal feminist and anti-imperialist theory. Since power is understood through the criteria of the dominant class, its meaning is influenced by them, And as the dominant class has been men for centuries, so the definition of power has become a masculine definition. The role of a feminist, from Hartsock's point of view, is to redefine the meaning of power from a feminine outlook, which is rooted in the lived experiences of women, specifically their role in human reproduction. Conceptualizing power from this viewpoint can change power relations in a way that being human becomes central to the concept, regardless of gender, just like reproduction is not related to gender. To buy from another man. Hartsock's theory is one of the countless theories we can talk about in these crucial times. But the important and interesting thing about it, along with these other similar theories, is how it focuses on the problem of power, masculine dominance, and revolting against power with a feminine outlook, which can lead the society towards equal human dignity. This dignity may be the same dignity that Antigone not only wanted for her brother, but in a moral sense, by standing up against Creon and even accepting death, desired for every human in her own feminine way. A female who was led by her lived experience and reproductive role, just as Hartsock mentions, to the extent that she even nursed her own father like a mother nurses a child. Antigone is a daughter of chaos from the beginning, and bound by the endless struggles of people around her for gaining power. She was a victim of the oppression and dehumanization, which was presented to her as the social norm. But she, unlike her sister's belief, who had succumbed to the unimportant role of women, led her own society towards reevaluating these norms with her insistence on love, family, humanity, and with her personal determination of morality. Her death resulted in the suicide of the king's son, created a new tragedy for Thebes and an epiphany as well. If we look at what is happening in Iran these days, we can find many similarities between Iranian women and Antigone. The Iranian woman stands against patriarchal tyranny to gain back her own rights, but also to lead her society towards more social justice. The Iranian woman is not just looking for the traditional feminist goal of emphasizing on woman. She is also an advocate for life and for freedom.
It is worth mentioning that in Persian language and Iranic culture, there are many signs of gender equality. For example, in Iranic creation myth, Geyumat, which was the first human, did not have a gender, and the name only suggests the main feature of humankind, which is being mortal. Culture and language are interdependent. Modern Persian language is a completely genderless language, without any gendered pronoun, vocabulary, or grammar. Naturally, the emergence of a female-led revolution from such culture is inevitable. Simply put, language is just assigning arbitrary terms to different phenomena, which also shape how the user of the language thinks. So, it is not far-fetched to conclude that the first step towards gender equality is to use the same language and terms for all genders.